Tahura ki Gulf Marine Park, ko te pātaka kai o Tikapa Moana, te Moana Nui Atoi, is 1.2 million hectares in size with more than 40 pest-free islands and 6 marine reserves. This seascape lies on the east coast of the Tāmaki Makaurau and Waikato regions, stretching down to the eastern coastline of the Coromandel Peninsula to Waihi. Kia ora, I'm Kiane Matatasipu, the host of Hauraki Gulf Kōrero, a podcast established by the Hauraki Gulf Forum. Here you will be introduced to kaitiaki of Te Moana Nui Atoi, Tikapa Moana, to discuss the state of the Gulf, and explore the many ways in which these groups and individuals are taking action to achieve a healthy, thriving marine environment.
We Newson, tātaku papa he Pākehā ia no Ingarangi, engari tātaku mama he Kāmira, e tupuakeu I raro I ngā rehe o aku maunga tapu o te kāinga o miti miti hokianga. Tērā te kāinga o ngā kāmira, te tātaku māmā he kāmira. Nā reira, hena e mihi ana kia koutou, e mihi ana kia tātū katoa, kia ora.
Kia ora, tēnā koe. So, Bobby Newson is our expert today on Hauraki Gulf Kōrero. I just want to welcome you to the podcast. Can you share with us, I te reo Pākehā, your role here with Auckland Museum?
Hi, kia ora. My role at the Auckland Museum, Auckland War Memorial Museum, is I'm managing the repatriation of human remains. And I also have a role of tikanga advisor, and as well as officiating in all tikanga porphyry, krakia, kautikai krakia, o ngā whakapuretanga o wetahe no ngā whakaringa. I open, when we have opening of galleries and mana whenua and myself, we will do the krakia together. But most times we ask for mana whenua to come in if they're not available. If it's internal, I do the tikanga side of it from here. So I'm like the kaumātua, but I'm not the kaumātua. I'm still thinking I'm too young for that.
Too young for that, eh? Too young. Still too young. How long have you been working with the museum here?
I've been here getting on just over 5 years now.
And what were you doing previous to this role?
I suppose it's ironical that I'm here at the museum because I am a Vietnam veteran. I served in Malaya and Vietnam in the army as an infantry in the bush. And then on leaving the army, I joined the police. I did 20 years in the police here in Auckland. And then I went teaching, and it was during my teaching time that I got a job with the council, tikanga advisor, and they wanted me to use my reo and things like that because I had an interpreter's license and my reo was still my first language. Growing up in Mitimiti, Māori was my first language and my grandparents only spoke Māori, and so I learned Māori before I could speak really English. And silly part of that, I failed English in school cert later on in high school. So, while working at the council, a position came up here for repatriation of human remains, and I applied for it and was lucky to get it. I think it's one of the few places that I've really had a job that I really enjoy. Mm. It's what I like to do, but also I am using the gifts from my people, from my grandparents, and that particularly on the krakia side and the tikanga side and te reo. And so I'm in a place here now that I think I can help with what happens here and facilitate what goes on in the museum. Yeah.
Mm. Speaking of your grandparents and your upbringing in Mitimiti, Mitimiti is in Te Taitoki Rau in the Hokianga, and that area is lush with kaimoana and with beautiful harbours and lots of experiences that you had as a tamaiti in and around that harbour, that moana, and around the waterways of your rohe. Can you tell me a little bit about your upbringing in Mitimiti, in particular your relationship with the moana?
Yeah. Because we're Mitimiti is a very coastal village. Our marae is right on the coast. Our home is within easy reach of the coast, of the beach. And so it was our food source, really. You know, we didn't bomb or abuse it or anything like that. But we took from the beach, from the moana, what we needed for a meal, as we knew there was it was always there for tomorrow. And so it makes me sad when I see people taking, you know, bag loads of mussels, kute, toheroa, bag loads of fish. And I know they don't go help each other out, or they don't just do it. When we get a lot of fish, we always put fish in people's cream stands at home, and we call out to them, and especially the old people, you take them fish. We get ngā koi koi, which is an easy fish to catch, and we go down netting for mullet. Tohiro was a staple diet for us until they put a tohiro season on us. And I think that was my first time of protest, because we're allowed to dig tohiros only in certain months of the year, August, and normally July, August. And you're only allowed 20 tohiro each person per day. And so because the tohiro soups or the tohiro beds were being plundered a fair bit by people, not ourselves, but people coming into Mitimiti, they put a tohiro season on us and they closed it down altogether. Mm. And so we weren't allowed to get tohiro, and it was our staple food. And my grandparents, who loved tohiro, would say to me, go ahead and get some tohiro. I'd go out and get them. And then, you know, if you were caught, you were taken to court and things like that. And some of our people were taken to court for it. But then, because we weren't allowed to get the tohiro, they issued a license to an organisation in Kaitaia in Waipapakauri for canning factory for tohiro. And they came out and they would just plough up our tohiro beds. And that wasn't just home, that was all in Kaitaia too as well. And so they had the license. And I'd say to my grandmother, no, we can't go and get it. Or why not? Or you haven't got a license. Who give the license in Māori? And she said, why are those people getting the tohiro? And I said, because they got a license. So she encouraged me, put it that way. I used to puncture the tires off their trucks that they used to leave on the beach. And yeah, and as a, yeah.
So, but kaitiakitanga later on, in action is probably the way that we can describe it safely. Now, you told me a little story about your karaua who was blind, and you would go and get mussels with him. Can you tell me that story again?
Each rock, mussel rock, kute rocks we call them. Kute is a staple diet up there, and it still is today. And people say the Mitimiti kute, they're not big, but they're sweet. And in my, I suppose, I jokingly used to say to them, especially people in Auckland here, said, oh, one of our jobs was when we get bags of sugar, we go and sprinkle it on the rocks to sweeten the mussels. That's what makes the Mitimiti mussels. And of course, if you tell a Mitimiti fellow, they say, oh, yeah, where'd you get that story from? But in relation to kute spawning, I would go out, my grandmother and grandfather. My grandmother mainly walked, but my grandfather would ride the horse. And I'd go out with him sometimes, double on horse or I walk. And he'd sit on the horse, and I used to have to swim out to some of the rocks. There was Mawake, there was Taikarawa, there was Mitimiti, Matihiti, Wairo, all the different rocks. And he'd say to go to Mawake to start with, which is our favourite rock. If that was open, that's where the beautiful mussels are. But if we couldn't get there, Wairua was quite easy, or, you know, one of the other rocks. And so I'd go out there and get the mussels and bring it back to him, and he'd sit on his horse and he'd break it open. And then he'd just taste it. And he'd say, no, not there. Move to the next one, take it over. So I'd move about and then bring a mussel back, and when he tastes it and it's the right taste to him, get your mussels from there. And then he'd call out, he just sort of knew. I think in Mātauranga there, when you live beside the sea, you talk to the waves, you talk to the moana, you know. Mm-hmm. But he could talk to the moana and he'd know that every seventh wave was the next big one. And so he used to make sure I was safe. And he'd say, "Kā hoki, mate." And I'd come back and I'd look back out the rock and a big wave would just go crashing right over it, you know. And then he'd say, "Now go out again, hā kōki atu," and I'd go out and pick more. And his mātauranga to me was like that, on safety, but also, you know, knew that when that rock was spawning, I'd leave them alone, go to the next rock, because that one is ready for harvesting, I suppose. And it's the same with, I suppose, all mussels, all seafood. You leave well alone what is spawning, and we don't even understand that now. We just go down and harvest them.
Coming from that childhood of really understanding the mātauranga in and around the moana, having kai moana right there for you to gather, having clean waters, having, you know, all of these beautiful things that you were able to experience as a child, did that change when you moved to Tāmaki Makaurau and came to see the harbours here, in particular the Hauraki Gulf?
Yeah, it did, because I never gave it any thought. I went to Hātōpetera College. That's the first, coming to Auckland, we were sent to boarding school. But we would go down and swim in over at Onewa Point. Mm. And I'd be looking for kūtai, and there was all these little ones on the thing, and they said they were no good to eat. And I used to wonder why, you know, there's a moana. But then to know that the harbour was being actually polluted, and at one stage raw sewage just being pumped into it. And then, you know, getting the stories from the local people here, especially from Ngāti Whātua, which is now Kelly Tarleton's, or was Kelly Tarleton's, that big wharf out there that was the actual sewage pumps. And right there, just before there, was Ngāti Whātua's mussel, all their kūtai. And I said, "Oh, you fellas are eating those, you know?" And then they said, "Yeah," until they started polluting the harbour. And now they're all gone. It started to dawn on me that, heck, you know, what are we doing with our kai moana? And then now I still go fishing out there, and we have to go way out 2 or 3 hours sometimes just to travel out to catch fish.
Wow.
And yet I could catch fish off the rocks at home in Mitimiti, Ngā Koi Koi, and just in a little hole. You didn't have to get wet. Just put the line down in the hole, and you have to one drink line sometimes and pull it up, and you'd get the feed, and then take it home and cook it up in a kerosene tin or on a fire. Yeah, and it was all there. But it's no longer there for me here in Auckland. Mm. You buy it now.
That's true. That is so true, that most of our kai moana comes in a container.
Yeah. Here in
Tāmaki. Yeah, yeah. When you go out fishing and you get to see the environment and experience the Hauraki Gulf and the space of that harbour, what, in your opinion, what is the current state of the Hauraki Gulf?
I think the current state is coming to a time when we need urgent attention.
Mm.
It's coming to a time when we need something to happen, whether it be education, whether it be stopping what is happening. And I suppose every fisherman who goes out there to catch fish, and that means people like myself who just want to go out and catch a fish.
Mm.
I go out on charter boats or go down to Point Chief sometime where we used to catch fish. No longer happening, and so you've got to go further and further out. And that's an indication to me that there's something happening in the harbour. I know they're doing a lot of dredging of the harbour, but where they're dropping the waste that they're dredging up, And I think it's places like Ōtata around the noises they were dumping there. Mm-hmm. And so were they just deepening the harbour for ships to come in and killing the sea food or the sea life mm-hmm. around our beautiful places like Ōtata?
I want to talk to you a bit about Ōtata because the museum has formed a partnership or a relationship with Ōtata, and you've been out onto the Motu, onto the Noises Islands, and had a look around. Can you tell me a little bit about that relationship and what the hope is?
Yeah, for that family that are caring for Ōtata now, with Sue Niruta and her whānau. They're doing a fantastic job. And from the museum side of it, we're looking at working with their whānau on looking at the surrounding sea life around Ōtata. I don't know, and I haven't got any proof of it. At one stage, I was told that the Noises was the sea burials place for when people died and they wanted to be buried at sea. It was somewhere around the Noises.
Wow.
And I only heard that. But then that made me a bit frightened to sort of go digging around the rocks around there. But when we did go out there, it's sad to see the rocks so bare. There's nothing on them, and not even seaweed growing on them, and sea life growing there. And they're saying there is a problem with kina. And I said, well, why don't we just get poor Māori out here and we'll eat the kina? But they're not those edible kina. These kina will just get onto the rock and then they'll just move about it, and then they'll sort of, I think they strip the whole rock, everything that's on it, and the kina will eat it all. And so there is a bit of a problem there now. And so where the fish are going to be, if you take that seafood, sea life away from there, you won't have fish going back there. Used to be the fishing grounds or breeding grounds of many fish, snapper, kahawai. But with all the sea life going from there, you're going to have real problems, and I think they've got that problem there now. But when we went on to Ōtata, we went with the archaeologist and then to see the structures of the banks on a different structure of rocks there. And they explained how the tide was actually taking away the land. And they can't stop it because what used to be further out, the land was further out, is now cutting right back into the Taraunga on the side of the mountains. And then you see the structure of, first of all, one of the old structures they explained to me was right down to the eruption years or centuries ago of Rangitoto. And they could actually trace that back to Rangitoto, the structure of the rock that's out of Ōtata. And then the different structures further up. And then one of the interesting ones that they had there was they started bringing out these little hangi rocks that people had put hangi down there. And there was people actually living on that island. And because of the hangi rocks that were there and people using those for cooking their food.
So
that was interesting. We climbed to the top of Ōtata. And to just get the view from there, I think it's one of those places where any iwi, if they were coming into the harbour by waka, like Ngāpuhi, like many of Tarawa and all iwi came in really from there, through there, which Tainui came in through Manukau. But it's an ideal place for parasites and things like that, because right from the top of Ōtata, we went right up to the top, you get a commanding view right around the whole of the area around Ōtata and around the parts of the Gulf.
What role does the museum play in this relationship?
There are several roles, because we have expertise in identification of fish life. And people such as Dr. Tom Trinsky is working here. He's a scientist, a marine scientist, and assisting with the people to look at the regrowth of sea life on back onto rocks, looking at how people can work with the environment that's out there as well as the sea, and then what's impacting on the environment. And so the role that we got out there, and not just looking at the history, which we are very interested in, of course we're a museum, but looking at working with the iwi, the people that are there and caring for the environment.
When we look at the mahi that the museum does and we look at it in relation to the moana, how does the museum decide what to go into partnership with or what who to work with, what to focus on? How does that happen? How has the Hauraki Gulf become an important part of the museum?
I'm sort of not at that where they start, but I sort of come in at the end part of it when they start going down with, you know, trips to the trips out to the out to the island.
You get to do the fun stuff.
I know. Yeah. We have people here that are experts like in marine biology, in land vertebrates, in working with insects, working with rākau, working with the environment, working with the land. And so when there's an opportunity of working with an iwi for their development, and then something that we can contribute to the environment or marine environment or the land environment out there. It's a relationship thing for us, which we treasure very seriously, with building up one of the best relations you can. And it's people from like the Neruda family there and other iwi which we're working with, like Ngāti Kuri way up north. When we apply, when they apply or we apply together for some funding to do a certain project in BioBlitz or working with sea life, how the restoration of sea life or restoration of swamps, awa, pollution of awa and things like that, and pollution actually flowing into the sea. So we work with the iwi to not only try and stop it, but also educate them on how they can actually revitalize it and restore the mana of the whenua, restore the mana of the moana. And it's marvelous when I see how our people can go out. They're like, I call them pipers, because you get a kura that'll go out with them, and the kids are just following, you know, our man who's a He's a doctor and looking at spiders. And of course, I see a spider, you know, it's a weta. And another one will look at weta. And, you know, but kids will go, and then you get little kids talking about the weta, talking about the spider, talking about the fish life, talking about the little seaweed that we picked up. And then we start getting specimens. And then, like in Ngāti Kuri, they started, because some of these specimens were sea life were only found in a certain area in the north, the iwi there gave them a name. And so they're going to get some, you know, in scientific name from overseas somewhere that's in French or Italian or Latin or something like that. We're now giving these species Māori names.
Good boy.
And so, yeah, it's a journey. So it's not just about us gaining, but it's about helping the iwi, and in that we can work together and we maintain that relationship. And that's what we've got with the Hauraki Forum and the people from Aotearoa.
How important is your role on the taumata, or how important is the taumata itself within these relationships, to have this strong collection of Māori who can hold those spaces, but who can also bring in the tikanga and the mātauranga. How important is it in this bigger picture?
It's really important because the taumata are our guiding advisory people to the museum. Mm. And it's important for us to follow the guidelines of our representatives on the taumata, including people who are there that are knowledgeable about the environment, people who are representing Ngāti Wai, people who are representing Ngāti Whātua, people who are representing Waikato. And when you hear stories and they can tell their stories about who landed where and what, why was Rangi Toto named and Ōtata and all those places. Mm. I don't know, but they can relate to those stories and tell us about them, but tell them to the kura as well. And so, it's just, I think it's vitally important that when we are working out there that, we're working with the people that do hold the mātauranga.
Mm.
And to me, it's the people on our taumata. If not the people on our taumata, they know who they are.
Another relationship that the museum have with the Hauraki Gulf through the Hauraki Gulf Forum is the museum hosts the Hauraki Gulf Forum seminar events. Yeah. And you were telling me earlier that you opened one of those events and have been part of them in the past. Tell me a little bit about those kaupapa.
When you bring tohunga together, and I call even there is a, I always try and find how where mātauranga Māori meets the science, the tohunga of science, and at a wānanga like that, you try and see where, well, you listen to the speakers on the, and they are tohunga in their own right, they're a scientist. And then you try and match it up with a speaker who's coming from a mātauranga Māori side. And then bringing those things together is a really, really important learning journey for me, and listening to that and the people that are attending there. But because I have the role of kaumātua here, they come and ask me to open it, and I'm happy to do that. And to be able to sit there and listen, I think it's a privilege.
Mm.
I'm honoured and privileged to be asked.
Some of your mahi outside or inside and outside of this institution is around te reo Māori, and you are a te reo Māori translator as well as a te reo Māori speaker, translator, and what's te kupu? What kupu am I looking for? Interpreter. That's the one. Interpreter, translator, speaker, all these things. Tell me a little bit about that mahi. How did you get into translating and interpreting te reo Māori as a certified person?
Well, many years ago, about 30 years now, I'll go back because I first started working when I left college in the late 60s, early 60s, because I joined the army in 67. Yeah, in the mid-60s, I left college. My first job was working in Māori Affairs, and I had a role in working in Māori Land Court. And in that, because I could speak Māori, I was doing some interpreting. People would get up and start talking and then they said, oh, what is that person saying? And I'd translate it into English. And so it's always, that was the seed that was planted in me then. Years later, which is about 30 years ago now, that I had the opportunity to sit my Māori interpreters and translators license with a fellow called Kingi Ihaka, Matu Kingi Ihaka. He was the commissioner of Tauruwhiri Te Reo Māori. And so I set the tests, written tests, and then the oral tests, and I was credited my license. And I think the good part about that license is that we have refresher times, we have courses, and we've just formed an organisation now that assist or to support all our translators out there now. We want them more educated because the language has changed so much, not just at El Māori, but you've got now a Māori dictionary for law, a Māori dictionary for science, a Māori dictionary for physics, a Māori dictionary for anything you can tell now, rather than having one dictionary. But especially if you start to get into and you're interpreting in technical terms. And so my, I suppose, one section of interpreting and translating is law, because I joined the police and then I just concentrated on the law side of it.
And we were laughing a little bit earlier because you said, oh, you know, I've been to the High Court a few times, and then we had to clarify that it was because you went to the High Court for this mahi, for the interpreting and translating mahi. but one of the hearings that you have been a part of in the past have been around dredging and Ports of Auckland hearing, and one interesting experience that you had was somebody was giving a submission to a hearing, I Te Reo Pākehā, and asked you if you could translate that I Te Reo Māori. And it's different because most often your job is to go the other way around and translate into Te Reo Pākehā. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience? Because, again, that was in and around the Hauraki Gulf and our environment, but you using a different skill set that you wouldn't normally do in regards to mahi on the moana.
yeah, that was actually a marine hearing at the Auckland Council.
Oh, yes.
At the town hall. Mm-hmm. It's like a tribunal hearing, yeah, tribunal before the panel, and I was prepared to go there to, you know, translate or interpret from Māori to Pākehā, because expecting Māori to be speaking. And when she asked me, she said, no, you'll be translating into Māori. I thought, oh, well, this is, I could do it, that's fine, you know. Yeah, but I go back on another occasion when I did that. I went to a hearing with some lawyers in Hamilton, and this was my role in the council. I'd actually facilitated this hearing, and most of the people there were Māori at the hearing in Hamilton, in Waikato. And the guy that was speaking in English. So I decided to translate his kōrero into Te Reo Māori. People started to laugh because he was speaking and some of them had earphones on, and I was just one of the speakers and I was doing it through the earphone. And I said, wakaue, tuku pātai ki te tino hiakai aho I aia nena. You know, don't ask him too many questions this time. It's getting late and I want to go home and have a cake. They all cracked up laughing, and of course the presenter going, why are you fellas laughing? So Bob just told us, don't ask any questions. He's getting hungry now. But he didn't know that I was translating his kōrero into Te Reo Māori. Right. And the Māori people that were there, they came up to me afterwards and said, pai ki te rongo I Te Reo Māori, I te rongo I aia kōrero I Te Reo Pākehā. See, so they enjoyed it much more, and which was explained in Te Reo Māori.
And our reo has such a beautiful way of describing things that allow you to feel the kōrero as opposed to just hear the kōrero. And when we're talking about things that are so important, like our taiao, like our moana, now awa, now whenua, when you hear those submissions or those kōrero I Te Reo Māori, it hits in a different place. It hits you in a different place, and it takes it to a different level of importance, takes those kōrero somewhere else. Have you found that? Are you...
Oh, all the time. All the time when you, you know, and some of it is... The feeling of the language is more important than the words. I try and think of, people ask me when you do a krakia, you know, is that a prayer? And I say, yeah, but there's a difference. Because if you tell me that Tangaroa is the god of the sea, I would say no. And people will look at me, and even some Māori will look at me and say, well, you mean no. I said, Tangaroa is the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do the krakia, I'm talking to Tangaroa. And when I'm doing the krakia, when I go in the ngahere, I'm talking to Tāne. Tāne is the forest. It's not this thing that's sitting above the forest or that above the sea, and then they will tell the sea to go be quiet or be calm. Tangaroa is the sea. And so I personalise it. So when you get te reo that people will understand, you personalise it and you bring it back into something that's more like you're talking to a person, people go, oh, hi, pira ana ne.
And you give it that level of mana deserves.
Yeah. It deserves the mana that it really has,
You've been described to me as... Someone described you to me. They said, he's like an independent local diplomat. Pēhā te whakaaro mō tēnā. What do you think about being described in that way? Is that how you see yourself, as an independent local diplomat in these spaces?
No. E kore te kūmara e kōrero i tōnā ke reka. I'm only doing what my grandparents taught me. And they made me who I am today. Tahare Williams, who's one of my real mentors in my life now. He used to be working here at the museum, and he had the role of kaumātua here. But then Ngā te kaumātua tanga, when he got a bit older, he decided to leave this role. But he didn't do the repatriation, and he still supports me. And whenever I I'm of troubled mind in Wairua, I go in Zihare, and he'll sit me down. He said, but you just listen to a fella like that, and you go, one day I'll be like that. If I'm going to be a diplomat like he is, that's the real kaumātua to me. I don't think I'm even fit to do up their shoelaces at the moment. I really do feel it a long way to go.
We talked a little bit about the moana and the personification of the moana. What do you think about that becoming formalised? So we have Te Ure Wera recognised, has it recognised with personhood, and we have the Whanganui Awa recognised as personhood. What do you think about Te Kapa Moana, Te Moana Nui Atoi, to be recognised in that way? Kia o whakaaro.
No, koina te kia ora ko te metika tēnā. That's how it should be, because mena mate ana te moana ko mate te whenua, mena mate ana te whenua ko mate tātou. If the sea is not well, you know, we got to fix it. And it's the person. To me, that's it. How do you fix the sea? Ma te krakia, ma te kaitiakitanga, ma te mauinga ture, kia pai te haere o ngā mea katoa irunga i te moana. Our kaitiaki role, we don't own it. We don't own it. It's about us. He kaitiaki nui hau tātou. We've got to look after it for the next generation. when all of that seafood is gone and our kids, our mokopunas, are left just, what, buying it from China? Ka mate tate. Ka mate te moana, ka mate tate.
Yep, when the seed dies, we die.
That's dead right.
Mm. Yeah. Can you tell me... And looking at the moana now and the mahi and experience that you've had over these last few years in and around this particular harbour, including your own personal experience with your fishing line, you're going to tell me where those secret spots are when we finish this podcast. Can you tell me what is your hope for the future of the Hauraki Gulf? What do you want to see happen moving forward?
Yeah, I don't really, for it to be the living moana that it was, te kapa moana, te moana nui atoe, beautiful names in I don't think we appreciate it now as much as our tūpuna did, because that was their food source. They looked after it. It was the main place of transport. But now there is no regard for it. I think the technology and that can help to control or do something about it. You know, agriculture has destroyed a lot of our awa and our farmland, and though we say yeah, it was our main source of food life, an agricultural country we are, milking cows and, you know, cattle farming and all that and sheep farming. But then all of that pollution flowing into the moana, we're starting to care for it now. But I'm just hoping that what the young people are saying is what I think we should start listening to, what is being done in climatic change around the world by young people, and saying it's not fair on them what we are doing now. And so I view the Hauraki, I view the Waitemata, the Awanui Aperetu, I view all of that as, yeah, what are we doing to look after it now?
Mm.
And so I go out there fishing. You know, we only allowed 7 fish each, and we throw back the smaller ones. It's again around the opposite way for me, because up home, if we catch a big daddy snapper, we got to put it back, because it's the father too many of those. You take out the mother or the father out of the whānau, then what's the rest of the whānau going to do?
Aye.
But in our fishing terms, we got to put the little fish back. And I suppose they're more little fish than the big fish. And how are we going to breed the bigger fish? And so I was just talking about this the other day. But that's how I view the moana now. I've got a lot of respect for moana, always have in my whole life. I love going to a marae where I can hear the waves, I can hear the moana, te haruru o te moana. And I just love sleeping like that, you know, because that's how we go miti miti. We just go out onto the beach sometimes and cuddle up in an old coat or get an old blanket and just listen to the moana. They call it one of them one, and we know when it's going to be rough. You can hear it. You know when it's going to be calm. You know when the seabirds are inland, they're hungry, nothing out there. Oh, they're all out there.
We need to start paying attention again.
We need to start paying attention to our natural life. Mm. And the moana's got a lot of messages that we're missing.
Mm. Well, we've come to the end of our kōrero. Although I I really could sit here in kōrero with you for the rest of the day, and it is such a beautiful day, so I might just do that once I turn this off. But I just want to mihi to you for giving us your time today, for giving us your whakaaro, your experience, and sharing with us a little bit about the mahi that Auckland Museum does in and around the Hauraki and the relationship that you have with a number of different organisations and whānau in the Hauraki Golf Forum. And I just wondered if you might close us in karakia.
Okay. Kei nui tatu. E tatu e te matuanui e te rangi tēnei rā ka tuku whakamui miti atu ki a koe mo wā mana ki katoku hia mai nei koe ki runga ia mātu. Mahi te tīmata tango tēnei rā me tēnei kaupapa. He kōrero ana mō te moana nui ātui me tīkapa moana. Me ngā huatanga e pāna kia tangaroa, kia mana ki chia, e koe. He ne o ngā taonga nā wano hoki hanga mō mātou, hei whānga hei tia ki a mātou, kia mautunu a mātou mana ki tanga. Ia rātou, kia ora tunu ai mō mātou, mokopuna tamariki, i ora tau rā. Ia rātou e tupu mai ana. Nā reira ka tuku atura e ne inu e kia koe iru ngāna hoki tō e ngua tapu. Āke, āke, āke. Āmine.
Āmine. Tēnā koe matua.
Kia ora.